His jaw tightened. He stood there in a suit, looking so polished and urbane, while radiating a wild, feverish energy. The contrast between what I saw when I looked at him and what I felt goaded my hunger. I loved that I got to have the man inside the suit, every delicious, untamable inch of him. The car arrived and we stepped inside. Excitement sizzled through me. He'd come after me. That made me so hot. He shoved an elevator key into the control panel and I groaned. "Is there anything you don't own in New York?" He was on me in an instant, one hand in my hair and the other on my ass, his mouth on mine in a violent kiss. He wasted no time, his tongue thrusting between my lips, plunging deep and hard. I moaned and gripped his waist, pushing onto my tiptoes to deepen the contact. His teeth sank into my lower lip with enough force to hurt. "You think you can say a few words and end us? There is no end, Ava." He flattened me into the side of the car. I was pinned by 6'2" of violently aroused male.
"I miss you,"
I whispered, grabbing his ass and urging him harder against me. Gideon groaned.
"Angel."
He was kissing me, deep, shamelessly desperate kisses that made my toes curl in my pumps.
"What are you doing?"
he breathed.
"You're going around stirring up everything."
"I've got time on my hands,"
I shot back, just as breathless.
"Since I dumped my asshat boyfriend."
He growled, fiercely passionate, his hand in my hair pulling so tightly it pained me.
"You can't make this up with a kiss or a fuck, Gideon. Not this time."
It was so hard to let him go. Nearly impossible after the weeks I'd been denied the right and opportunity to touch him. I needed him. His forehead pressed to mine.
"You have to trust me."
I put my hands on his chest and shoved him back. He let me, his gaze searching my face.
"Not when you don't talk to me."
I reached over, pulled the key from the control panel, and held it out to him. The car began its descent.
"You put me through hell. On purpose. Made me suffer. And there's no end in sight. I don't know what the fuck you're doing, Ace, but this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde shit ain't cutting it with me."
His hand went into his pocket, his movements leisurely and controlled, which was when he was at his most dangerous.
"You're completely unmanageable."
"When I've got clothes on. Get used to it."
The car doors opened, and I stepped out. His hand went to the small of my back, and a shiver moved through me. That innocuous touch, through layers of material, had been inciting lust in me from the very first.
"You put your hand on Corinne's back like this again, and I'm breaking your fingers."
"You know I don't want anyone else," he murmured. "I can't. I'm consumed with wanting you."
Both the Bentley and the Mercedes were waiting at the curb. The sky had darkened while I'd been inside, as if it were brooding along with the man beside me. There was a weighted expectation in the air, an early sign of a gathering summer storm. I stopped beneath the entrance overhang and looked at Gideon.
"Make them ride together. You and I need to talk."
"That was the plan."
Angus touched the brim of his hat and slid behind the wheel. The other driver walked up to Gideon and handed him a set of keys.
"Mr. Mel,"
he said, by way of greeting.
"Ava, this is Raoul."
"We meet again," I said. "Did you pass on my message last time?" Gideon's fingers flexed against my back.
"He did."
I beamed. "Thank you, Raoul." Raoul went around to the front passenger side of the Bentley, while Gideon escorted me to the Mercedes and opened the door for me. I felt a little thrill as he got behind the wheel and adjusted the seat to accommodate his long legs. He started the engine and merged into traffic, expertly and confidently navigating the powerful car through the craziness of New York City streets.
"Watching you drive makes me want you," I told him,
noting how his easy grip on the wheel tightened.
"Christ!"
He glanced at me.
You have a transportation fetish.
I have a Gideon fetish. My voice lowered. It's been weeks.
And I hate every second of it. This is torment for me, Ava. I can't focus. I can't sleep. I lose my temper at the slightest irritants. I'm in hell without you.
I never wanted him to suffer, but I'd be lying if I said it didn't make my own misery better knowing he was missing me as much as I was missing him. I twisted in my seat to face him. Why are you doing this to us?
I had an opportunity and I took it.
His jaw firmed.
This separation is the price. It won't last forever. I need you to be patient.
I shook my head. No, Gideon, I can't. Not anymore.
You're not leaving me. I won't let you.
I've already left. Don't you see that? I'm living my life and you're not in it.
I'm in it every way I can be right now.
By having Angus following me around? Come on. That's not a relationship. I leaned my cheek against the seat. Not one I want, anyway.
Ava.
He exhaled harshly.
My silence is the lesser of two evils. I feel like whether I explain or not, I'll drive you away. But explaining carries the greatest risk. You think you want to know, but if I tell you, you'll regret it. Trust me when I say there are some aspects of me you don't want to see.
You have to give me something to work with. I set my hand on his thigh and felt the muscle bunch, then twitch in response to my touch. I've got nothing right now. I'm empty. He set his hand over mine.
You trust me. Despite what you see, to the contrary, you've come to trust in what you know. That's huge, Ava, for both of us. For us, period.
There is no us.
Stop saying that.
You wanted my blind trust and you have it, but that's all I can give you. You've shared so little of yourself and I've lived with it because I had you. And now I don't.
You have me, he protested.
Not the way I need you. I lifted one shoulder in an awkward shrug. You've given me your body and I've been greedy with it because that's the only way you're really open to me. And now I don't have that. And when I look at what I do have, it's just promises. It's not enough for me. In the absence of you, all I have are a pile of things you won't tell me. He stared straight ahead, his profile rigid. I pulled my hand out from under his and twisted the other way, giving him my back while I looked out the window at the teeming city.
If I lose you, Ava, he said hoarsely. I have nothing. Everything I've done is so I don't lose you.
I need more. I rested my forehead against the glass. If I can't have you on the outside, I need to have you on the inside. But you've never let me in. We drove in silence, crawling along through the morning traffic. A fat drop of rain hit the windshield, followed by another.
After my dad died, he said softly, I had a hard time dealing with the changes. I remember that people liked him, liked being around him. He was making everyone rich, right? And then suddenly the world flipped on its head and everyone hated him. My mother, who'd been so happy all the time, was crying nonstop. And she and my dad were fighting every day. That's what I remember most. The constant yelling and screaming.
I looked at him, studying his stony profile, but I didn't say anything, afraid to lose the moment.
She remarried right away. We moved out of the city. She got pregnant. I never knew when I'd run across someone my dad had fucked over, and I took a lot of shit for it from other kids. From their parents, teachers. It was big news. To this day, people still talk about my dad and what he did. I was so angry. At everyone. I had tantrums all the time. I broke things.
He stopped at a light, breathing heavily.
After Christopher came along, I got worse. And when he was 5, he imitated me, pitching a fit at dinner and shoving his plate across the table and onto the floor. My mom was pregnant with Ireland then, and she and Vidal decided it was time to put me into therapy.
Tears slid down my face at the picture he painted of the child he'd once been, scared and hurting and feeling like an outsider in his mom's new life.
They came out to the house. The shrink and the doctoral candidate she was supervising. It started out all right. They both were nice, attractive, patient. But soon the shrink was spending most of the time counseling my mother, who was having a difficult pregnancy in addition to 2 young boys who were out of control. I was left alone with him more and more frequently.
Gideon pulled over and put the car into park. His hands gripped the wheel with white-knuckled force, his throat working. The steady patter of rain softened, leaving us alone with our painful truths.
"You don't have to tell me anymore,"
I whispered, unbuckling my seatbelt and reaching out to him. I touched his face with fingertips, damp with my tears. His nostrils flared on a sharply indrawn breath.
"He made me come. Every goddamn time. He wouldn't stop until I came, so he could say I liked it."
I kicked off my shoes and pulled his hand away from the wheel so I could straddle his lap and hold him. His grip on me was excruciatingly tight, but I didn't complain. We were on an insanely busy street, with endless cars rumbling past on one side and a crush of pedestrians on the other, but neither of us cared. He was shaking violently, as if he were sobbing uncontrollably, but he made no sound and shed no tears. The sky cried for him, the rain coming down hard and angry, steaming off the ground. Holding his head in my hands, I pressed my wet face to his.
"Hush, baby. I understand.
I know how that feels, the way they gloat afterward, and the shame and confusion and guilt you felt. It's not your fault. You didn't want it. You didn't enjoy it."
"I let him touch me at first," he whispered. "He said it was my age. Hormones. I needed to masturbate and I'd be calmer, less angry all the time. He touched me, said he'd show me how to do it right. That I was doing it wrong."
"Gideon, no."
I pulled back to look at him, imagining in my mind how it would develop from that point on, all the things that would have been said to make it seem like Gideon was the instigator in his own rape.
"You were a child in the hands of an adult who knew all the right buttons to push.
They want to make it our fault so they have no culpability in their crime. But it's not true."
His eyes were huge and dark in his pale face. I pressed my lips gently to his, tasting my tears. "I love you, and I believe you, and none of this was your fault."
Gideon's hands were in my hair, holding me in place as he ravaged my mouth with desperate kisses.
"Don't leave me."
"Leave you? I'm going to marry you."
He inhaled sharply. Then he pulled me closer, his hands careless and rough as they slid over me. Impatient rapping against the window made me jerk in surprise. A cop in rain gear and safety vest looked at us through the untinted front window, scowling at us from beneath the brim of her hat.
"You've got 30 seconds to move on, or I'll cite you both for public indecency."
Embarrassed, my face flaming, I climbed back into my seat, sprawling in an ungraceful tumble. Gideon waited until I had my seatbelt on, then put the car in drive, tapped his brow in a salute to the officer, and pulled back out into traffic. He reached for my hand, lifted it to his lips, and kissed my fingertips.
"I love you."
I froze, my heart pounding. Linking our fingers together, he set them on his thigh. The windshield wipers slid from side to side, the rhythmic tempo mocking the racing of my pulse. Swallowing hard, I whispered,
"Say that again."
He slowed at a light. Turning his head, he looked at me. He looked weary, as if all his usual pulsing energy had been expended and he was running on fumes. But his eyes were warm and bright, the curve of his mouth loving and hopeful.
"I love you."
Still not the right word, but I know you want to hear it.
"I need to hear it,"
I agreed softly. "As long as you understand the difference." The light changed, and he drove on.
"People get over love. They can live without it. They can move on. Love can be lost and found again, but that won't happen for me. I won't survive you, Ava."
My breath caught at the look on his face when he glanced at me.
"I'm obsessed with you, Angel. Addicted to you. You're everything I've ever wanted or needed. Everything I've ever dreamed of. You're everything. I live and breathe you. For you."
I placed my other hand over our joined ones.
"There's so much out there for you. You just don't know it yet."
"I don't need anything else. I get out of bed every morning and face the world because you're in it."
He turned the corner and pulled up in front of the crossfire behind the Bentley. He killed the engine, released his seatbelt, and took a deep breath.
"Because of you, the world makes sense to me in a way it didn't before. I have a place now, with you."
Suddenly I understood why he'd worked so hard, why he was so insanely successful at such a young age. He'd been driven to find his place in the world, to be more than an outsider. His fingertips brushed across my cheek. I had missed that touch so much. My heart bled at feeling it again.
"When are you coming back to me?"
I asked softly.
"As soon as I can."
Leaning forward, he pressed his lips to mine.
"Wait."